Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The United States government recognizes 574 Native American tribes. Their members live in all 50 states, but at least in the eastern half of the U.S., there are more than a dozen states with no official tribal presence. Illinois was among them until last week, when for the first time since the mid-1800s, the United States recognized the presence of tribal land in the 21st state. For generations, the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation has argued that land in northern Illinois had been wrongly sold out from beneath one of their ancestors back in 1849. Last week, the U.S. Department of Interior placed portions of the Chabanais Reservation into trust for the tribe. Joining us now to talk through this development and some of the history of how we got here is Roslyn LaPierre, an indigenous writer and professor of history at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's an enrolled member of the Blackfeet of Montana, also Métis. Professor LaPierre, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
So I want to get into the details of what happened here and the legal wrangling that went on. But first, I just want to begin with sort of your personal top line reaction to this news.
Oh, I think this is amazing. This is an extremely important step for tribes, especially tribes who are from east of the Mississippi River, where the, you know, the Removal Act was occurred in the 1830s. And as we know, a part of this story is that those tribes were then deported from those places, including what is now Illinois. But the ability for them to return back to their homelands, to be able to own land in their homelands is really amazing. And it just shows you that tribes never forget. You know, they never forget where they're from. And they especially never forget the injustices that have been done to them.
Well, maybe that's a good segue then into, we can talk a little bit about the history specifically of Chabanais and this land in particular in Illinois.
Yeah, so this is a story. First of all, I'll say the tribal chairperson has done a great job of sharing this story. And there is a great podcast on Capital Cast that was done, I think, a month ago.
Oh, and I should say, yeah, and I'll say it to our listeners, that's it's Joseph Rupnik. We've actually spoken with him on the show before. He was not available this week to join us for this program. So we do have some tape of him. He talked to one of my colleagues last week. We'll be playing that a little later in the conversation. But so, yes, back to the mid-1800s, though.
Yeah, so you know, that's a really sort of complicated time in U.S. history. There were multiple sort of wars that occurred, from the 1812 war to Black Hawk's War to the war with Tecumseh. There was a lot going on in this region of what became the United States. And as part of what was going on, there was a leader at that time, Chabanais, who was part of the Potawatomi. He himself was not Potawatomi. He had married into the Potawatomi, but he became a leader of that particular tribe. And as part of the relationship that the Potawatomi held with the United States of America at that time, they were able to preserve or keep a land in what is now Illinois in a treaty that occurred in 1829, and then another treaty that occurred a couple years later, the Treaty of Chicago. And they lived there. That group continued to live on those lands, and they never sold them to the United States, and they never shared them with the state of Illinois. As you mentioned at the beginning, then what happened in 1849 was he and his relatives went to Kansas, where the majority of the tribe had been deported to. They had been deported first to Missouri, then to Iowa. They ended up in Kansas, and he went to go visit his relatives. And at that time, when he went to go visit his relatives, the state of Illinois seized his lands, illegally took them, and illegally sold them.
And then began this 150 50, I guess, 170-year legal saga in fits and starts. Let's listen to some tape. I mentioned the Prairie Band Potawatomi chairman, Joseph Rupnik. Again, he's been on our show previously. We've talked about this. He was not available today, but he did talk with my IPM News colleague, Jim Meadows, last week when the news broke. And here's what he had to say about how this came to be.
Because of the recent Supreme Court case, McGirt versus Oklahoma, the Supreme Court reaffirmed that unless Congress takes specific actions to disestablish a reservation, that reservation still exists. So we filed a trust application through the Department of Interior for the 128 acres of land on the farm that we own, plus two houses, as trust on reservation. Friday at approximately 11:30, that was accepted, and that land is now in trust, meaning that it is officially a reservation.
Talk about what that means, that sort of officially it's a reservation. What is that? What is the significance of that designation?
Yeah, so just to reiterate what the chairman just said, so there was a Supreme Court case that happened recently, which is an extremely important Supreme Court case for tribal nations and for tribal sovereignty, which is the McGirt versus Oklahoma. And as he said, you know, what McGirt reaffirmed or affirmed was just this idea that Congress is the only one, it's the only body in the United States, the president can't even do it, that has the authority to change tribal boundaries or to have actions on tribal lands. Because of McGirt, that was the reason why the Potawatomi were then able to reclaim tribal sovereignty over their lands. Here in Illinois. At that time, as we know, some of us know from the story, is they had already repurchased land in Illinois. And so they owned the land, but they didn't have it held in trust by the United States of America, which then is the way that it becomes reservation land.
And I guess what is the significance of that designation? Because like you said, they own the land, they could build a house there or farm it if they wanted to, but it's not the same. And why is it not the same?
Right, it's not the same. So the United States government has a law that explains what trust and trust lands are. And trust lands are different than other lands in the U.S. Trust lands are land where the title is held by the United States for the benefit of Native American tribes or individual Native Americans. But these are lands that then are controlled by tribes. So when there is trust land, that is what land is on a reservation. When there is trust land, the only people who have authority are tribes and the federal government. The state does not have authority over those lands.
So I want to come back to the story of Chabanais and some of the history here. He was seen as an ally to the United States and to the white or European descended settlers who were in the area. I don't know if you want to delve into that or just maybe we can say, what does it say that the state still seized his land, even though he was an ally?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. His story, you know, is one where, again, it was a complicated time in the history of the United States, and tribes were allying with different groups. Some tribes, you know, allied with the British, some tribes, you know, allied with, in other areas, not here, but like with the Spanish or the French. And in his case, he allied with the United States, which at that point wasn't, you know, Illinois was not a state yet. Because of that allyship, he was able, when treaties were signed, not just him, but other Potawatomi leaders as well, to set aside lands and say, we want to stay here. We want to stay in our homelands, and we want this land set aside for us. When at that point, the majority of tribes were beginning to be moved out of what would become the state of Illinois. And again, I mean, this is, really one of those tragic stories of, even though he created an allyship with the United States of America, he was still somebody that became a victim of, you know, the empire that became the United States, which is, you know, eventually a country that grew because of the lands of indigenous people and also the resources there.
And correct me if I'm wrong on any of this history. Some of my own reading here says that, you know, there would be other tribal groups that maybe were planning to attack white settlers, and he would ride, he in some cases rode over to warn them and, you know, tried to prevent this, tried to make peace. So it really is striking that that he was effectively betrayed this way. Is his the only, I mean, I presume his is not the only case like this. How many, do we have a sense of how many other cases like this are out there?
His is not the only case. Also the Potawatomi that are now in Michigan also have land and land claims in what is now Illinois that stem from these same treaties.
Can you talk about some of the history of between 1849 and 2024? Why there were, obviously this is not the first attempt or the only attempt to get this land designated this way. What has unfolded since between then and now?
But yeah, I mean, one of the things, again, remember, tribes always remember where their homelands are, where their nations are. And in this particular case, even though his land was stolen, Chabanais continued until his death in 1859. He continued to travel back to Illinois to visit his homelands. He continued to travel back to Illinois to visit with friends and relatives who were living in Chicago at that time. One of the things to remember is that even though Chicago grew as this huge metropolitan area and city, the indigenous people that have been there have always been there. Like, folks didn't completely leave. So he continued to visit folks there. And the story of the injustice that was done to him and his family and the Potawatomi people continued to resonate within the community. And it was told through the generations. And because of that, there has been an ongoing one interest, but then also this ongoing sort of legal battle to return to the state of Illinois, to return this land that was part of the treaty. And that has been happening over the years, but more recently in the last 30 plus years, both with the chairman's mother when she was on tribal council, and then with himself the last few years, working within the system, right? Working within the system of, one, just buying land, right? Anybody can buy land, including tribes, and the tribe buying land, holding it until they were able to then transfer the title back to the federal government and put it in trust so that it could become a reservation.
Yeah, you mentioned the indigenous people who lived in Chicago, they never left. In fact, you literally wrote a book on this, City Indian Native American Activism in Chicago from 1893 to 1934. What has been the broader story of Native Americans advocating for themselves in Illinois in that era?
Yeah, I mean, indigenous people, again, I'll just start by saying, indigenous people have been here for thousands of years. Indigenous people in Illinois have been here for thousands of years. And even though there has been a change over, and there has been a settler colonial society has moved in and is now the majority of the population, that does not mean that indigenous people, one, don't continue to live here, and two, don't remember that this is their homeland or their nation. One of the things I was interested in looking at, myself and David Beck, we're both historians, was looking at the activism of indigenous people. And we wrote a book that really focused on Between the Fairs, 1893 and 1934, and just looked at the activism of indigenous people of that time. That was a time period when many indigenous people were Many of the reservations out west were being created. A lot of Indigenous people were being forced to attend boarding schools out in the east. And we were just interested in what was happening to these populations and what kinds of activism they were participating in. And in the city of Chicago, it really became this huge national hotbed for Indigenous activism. And they were the one that folks that were there really were the ones that were leading a lot of the discussion around Indigenous rights, Indigenous land rights, and what was going on nationally.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show, and we're talking about the recent designation of tribal land in Illinois for the first time. This is the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation. This land was sold out from under Chief Chabanet back in 1849, and the tribe has been working for generations, as we've just heard, to get this designation for this land back in their tribal name. We're talking about this with Rosalyn LaPierre, who's an Indigenous writer and a professor of history at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the recent designation of land. It originally belonged to Chief Chabanet of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation. It was sold out from under him when he went west to visit other members of his tribe in 1849. And just last week was designated as tribal land by the United States government after a generational fight. We're talking about this with Rosalyn LaPierre, who is a professor of history at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. She's also an Indigenous writer, an enrolled member of the Blackfeet of Montana, and Métis. If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455 is the number. We'll be on this topic for another 10 minutes or so, 800-222-9455. I want to play another clip from Chairman Joseph Rupnik of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation. He, again, wasn't able to join us today, but he did talk to my Illinois Public Media colleague, Jim Meadows. And one of the things they talked about was potential use of this land.
All the civil regulatory authority defaults to the tribal nation, so the zoning and taxing authority defaults to the tribe. Right now, the nation has applied and was awarded tribal tourism grant dollars. Part of that grant dollars are to develop a plan. So right now we hired a firm. We're just in the very beginning stages of that, where that firm is going to analyze the best use of that land and what we can possibly do to benefit both the nation and the surrounding community.
Professor LaPierre, I wonder what you think this means for the land in the sense of where it fits into the broader landscape and the people around there.
Well, I think one of the things that citizens of Illinois will need to readjust is recognizing that now there are three jurisdictions, right, in the state of Illinois. There's going to be Illinois, there's going to be the tribe, the Prairie Band of Potawatomi, and there's going to be the federal government. So in this particular case, on a reservation, again, who has authority? The tribe does, and the federal government does. And the tribe gets to decide a lot of things, including criminal authority and the stuff that that the chairman had just mentioned. So it's something that not only citizens, but also people who work within the Illinois state government will have to start learning about working with a tribe and working with a federally recognized tribe that has land within the state boundaries. Having said that, 130 acres is not a lot of land.
Yeah.
And if you take a look at the map, it is in a rural area of Illinois. It is in an undeveloped area of Illinois. And so I think that they're going about it the right way in terms of thinking about how they want to potentially use this land if they do use it, or if they keep it as undeveloped land. I know that from working with a lot of different tribes in terms of revitalizing their relationship with the land and the landscape, one of the things I'm hoping that happens with the Prairie Band Potawatomi is they're able to bring back many of their elders and bring back their knowledge keepers back to this area of Illinois and begin to reestablish a relationship with that land and reestablish a relationship with that landscape.
I've got a kind of a big question here, and I'm trying to think of how to phrase it and pulled all these multiple threads together into one question. So I'm going to ask you to bear with me. But so, okay. Native American people, indigenous people have always been in Illinois. We've talked about that. We've established that. As somebody who was born and raised here, though, I don't feel as though that presence was as top of mind as it is for someone who was raised in Oklahoma or Kansas or somewhere else out west where there's a more established tribal presence. And I want to take that idea, and then you and I have talked in the past about things like the chief mascot at the University of Illinois. There are still high schools that have these Native American themed mascots. Can you just talk about the idea of that sort of lack of official presence in Illinois, in other eastern states, and maybe the lack of cultural understanding that has come up? I mean, does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the, you know, the long history of since Illinois became a state, indigenous people, again, were removed because of the Removal Act from the state of Illinois. All of the tribes were deported. All of them were deported elsewhere. Those tribes still exist. They all still exist. They just don't, they're just not in the state of Illinois. Some of them are in Kansas. Some of them are in Oklahoma. Some of them are in Michigan and Wisconsin. They're elsewhere, but they're not in the state of Illinois. So because of that history, there has been a lack of awareness of the indigenous people who this is their homeland. But over the years, the city of Chicago, again, indigenous people who are, that's their homeland, such as the Potawatomi, have always been there, have never left. But over the years, Chicago has become one of the largest urban Indian populations, multi-tribal, from around the United States, Canada, Mexico, and elsewhere. And so it is one of the largest indigenous communities now that's an urban Indian community. I would just say, I would argue this differently than you just did. As somebody who is indigenous, and all I do is hang out with indigenous people, I see indigenous stuff everywhere because I go to community events and I go to activities. And so I see it all the time versus the opposite of not seeing it.
We're in our silos, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's talk about, you mentioned state government. So Illinois does not have any sort of state department that deals with tribal affairs. Do you anticipate that something like that being necessary or potentially in the future?
I think that will be something that is necessary, partly because, again, the state of Illinois is going to have to learn how to work with federally recognized tribes in the state of Illinois, and again, tribes that have reservation lands. And it is a different relationship. Sometimes it can be a very contentious relationship. I am from the state of Montana. The state of Montana has 12 tribes. The state of Illinois historically had 13 tribes. In the state of Montana, it's been a long time contentious relationship between tribes and states, especially over a lot of jurisdictional issues and authority over land. And resources. I would argue that in the state of Illinois, this may not be the last tribe that decides to return to their homeland, decides to buy land and put it in federal trust, and it might not be the last one that has a reservation in the state of Illinois. So because of that, Illinois should take the necessary steps at this point to create a good relationship with the Prairie Band of Potawatomi, but then also creating, you know, those kinds of expertise within their state so that they know how to work with a federally recognized tribe.
What are some of the other fights taking place in this broader context? And, you know, I guess maybe, you know, one way of thinking of this is the federal government's finally righting a wrong. Maybe that framing is a little too positive or Pollyanna-ish. Take it where you will.
So, yes. So the United States government has what is called a trust responsibility. We've said the word trust several times. This is something that, again, folks who are citizens of the state of Illinois need to learn what that means now too, right? Trust land, trust responsibility, the doctrine of trust. These are phrases that the United States has over time created an obligation between itself and between tribal nations through treaties primarily that say what our relationship is going to be. And one of the things that the United States government has agreed to or has promised to is to protect and assist Indian tribes. And this is what's known as the doctrine of trust responsibility.
I guess I'm thinking in terms, though, of activism as well, right? So this, the activism of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation is one form. You wrote, again, in the book about activism in Chicago between the World Fairs. City Indian was the name of that book. I'm thinking of the American Indian Movement, a generation, or I guess, is that two generations ago now, depending on how you want to think of that? Put this and the, you know, where are we today in the broader, you know, context of indigenous rights and activism?
Yeah, to return to something I sort of previously said about the Prairie Band Potawatomi, that they never forgot where they came from, right? And they never forgot the injustices that were done to them. You could say that on a broader context as well. Indigenous people have not forgotten where their home or homelands are. They have not forgotten the injustices that have been done to them. And even though on the one hand, we think 170 years is a quote unquote long time, for other folks, it's a short time. And it's something that I would just argue Indigenous people will always remember those injustices. The stories of those injustices continue to be passed on in oral traditions in Indigenous communities. But now also, you know, folks like me, I'm a historian, I write history, that this is something that in terms of contemporary activism, that Indigenous activists and scholars continue to remind, you know, the general public of these this history, the injustices that have occurred, and the role that the United States has in helping address the injustices that have happened.
Professor Roslyn LaPierre is a professor of history at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, an Indigenous writer and an enrolled member of the Blackfeet of Montana, also Métis. Professor LaPierre, thank you so much for joining us again today on the 21st Show.
Yep, thank you again for inviting me.